The holidays can sneak up fast, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has a host of unique, high-quality, and often handmade gifts, many of which are crafted by independent artists and small businesses. That attention to detail often means products are made in small batches, so the best finds can sell out fast, like the book of famous Dodgers newspaper clippings ordered on Uncommon Goods that I received as a birthday gift. It was a special present catered to my liking that can't be found anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and diehard baseball fans like me, to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're not only finding the best and most unique gifts for the people you care about, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice and have donated more than $3 million to date. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
All right, welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, my co-host, Dylan White, the biggest Blue Jays fan you know, native of Toronto. What's going on, Dylan? How you feeling about those Blue Jays in the World Series, huh?
Still riding the contact high from all that champagne that was being popped on the celebration. I think I'm actually the second biggest Jays fan behind your son, but maybe the biggest fan in Toronto.
Yeah, I know we tuned in for all those games. Throughout the run, it's been a really fun season, I think, and a fun team to follow. I obviously get to cover them year round, to handle them for the handbook, as well as all the in-season updates, and probably get a little bit more love from the Blue Jays fan base than I do any of the other fan bases that I cover. No disrespect to the Cubs, Cardinals, or Astros, but the Jays, they're just kind Canadians, and they show some love and interest. They're always in my chats, and I very much appreciate it. So, I got a little soft spot for the Jays at this point, too. I think, like, when you cover teams and you know people within the organizations, and you report on different parts of the organization and they do see some success. I think the other part of it too is, like, I've sort of been beating the drum on this farm system and in this organization for the last couple of years that I think things were better than they might have seemed on the surface. And bigger investments have been made into player development over the last couple of years. The right people have been put into place, and we've seen big improvements on the bat speed front with the major league team and the minor league teams. Certainly the pitching development, which I wrote about kind of in depth about, what Ricky Meinhold and Justin Lehrer have been able to do with that group. And that's something that does touch on, Trey Savage and some of these other guys that have, come through the system, or at least were in minor league camp, or they had their hands on in training sessions. I think just a very streamlined sort of focus on strike throwing your best stuff and challenging guys in the zone. And it's worked, all throughout their different levels. I think it's even showed up in some of the Statcast data stuff that we've looked at, with the pitching certainly was improved and was performing well. The hitting, actually, especially within the top 30, performed really well for the Jays. I was pleasantly surprised about that. So I think there is a lot of good things and a lot of good feelings around the team right now. And I'm glad that they were able to get some success, because I think people kind of forget it's a big market. They represent a whole country at this point. Though I'm sure there's probably some Mariners fans in Vancouver over the border as proximity, right? But the majority of Canada and, Toronto's a big marketplace, and they spend and they're aggressive. They've been really aggressive in the free agent market and the trade market the last couple of years. They're willing to take on salary. They're willing to pay up in sort of that second tier of free agency. And they've chased a lot of the top tier guys and just haven't been able to close in the Ohtanis or the Soto. And I, you know, I guess, but you know, maybe Alonso as well. So there, mm-hmm. there were a few different ones that they were in on. So, kind of interesting. And I think there's still potentially some money to be spent next offseason. And you could even see a bounce back from Anthony Santander, who you really didn't get anything mm-hmm. from. People forget he hit 40 home runs in 2024. It wasn't that long ago, and he's not that old. So, you know, a return to form, and, you know, maybe he's not going to hit 40, but like a high 20s, 30 home run season, and just a solid year from him, I think really lengthens that lineup. We've already seen the strengths. They're interesting too, from the sense that, like, I know I talked about this with JJ, but like Ernie Clement is kind of like, you know, a late career breakout, like a late bloomer. It's kind of the same with Nathan Lucas. They have like a ton of control with those guys. Both mm-hmm. guys are under team control until 2028, 2029. So they're going to have them for the, you know, the majority of their productive years. And they're almost kind of valuable trade assets now too, because, you know, even if they're more platoon or role type players, they're really good platoon or role type players that add a lot of value on both sides of the ball. So kind of interesting how the team was built. You know, I picked the Jays to beat the Dodgers when we did predictions on the Prospect podcast with JJ. I felt like I had to. I don't know how confident I am in that decision. I'm certainly not. I'm not throwing any money on it, but yeah. Are you the same, or are you going to like do the reverse juju thing and pick the Dodgers and hope the Jays win?
Basically. So I can't lose. I think it'll be a good series. The Jays have always had their backs to the wall, it seems. And the Toronto fan base is notoriously kind of woe is me, it's over, just like always, nothing good ever happens. And so like seeing all these comebacks, like we felt that way before the season ended, and then they did the four in a row and got the home field advantage, number one seed, and then, oh, you know, we're down 2-0 and then come back and win it, and, you know, we're losing the last game and come back. So I think it's been very exciting. So I think now, it used to be that the stadium would go really quiet if we're losing going into the like late innings, like it's over. There's no chance we're coming back. But now it feels like we all kind of think it's going to happen. Something's going to happen. And you know, when you have George Springer, anything can happen.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it firsthand when Vlad showed up in an Austin Matthews shirt and everyone freaked out. And it was like, no, that's a statement. He's like, I'm here to break some curses. You know, right. I'm not here to worry about bad juju. Like I'm the curse breaker. I'm the bringer of good vibes. Vlad Guerrero Jr., our hero. Yeah. All right. So, we're going to get into the second half of our show from last week, talking about way too early ADPs from NFBC Draft Champion Leagues Part 2 today. We're going to be talking outfielders. We're going to be talking starting pitchers. We got more draft data. Our friend James Anderson over at RotoWire was talking and wrote a little bit about his DC. And so you pulled in some of that ADP data. So we got a little bit more perspective on where some of these prospects are going in some of these drafts. I'm in the midst of a very early prospect mock draft put on by Toolshed and Mr. Eric Cross. A lot of big names are in this one. Chris Clegg, our colleague, of course, Matt Eddy, the Welsh, James Anderson, you know, Beck from Dynasty Dugout, you know, my good friend Tim Kanak, who I did a podcast with a couple of weeks ago, Ross Jensen, and a bunch of the scout line guys as well. And of course, Chris Blessing. So a lot of big names, a lot of guys that, you know, heavy hitters, been around for a while. So we're about 8 rounds in right now. I think in a couple of weeks, it's a 33-round draft. So we're like a quarter of the way through, just about, more or less. We're about halfway through round 9. So I guess, yeah, about a quarter of the way through. So a lot of picks still to be made. It's all prospects. Posted Japanese players are eligible. So was it Murakami came off the board a little while ago? So We're eight rounds in. I went floor. I have the turn. I always end up at the back end of these drafts. I don't think I've ever been in any expert mock where I've picked like above 10. I swear to God, Dylan, I got to go back and look at all of them because I'm sure in Fantrax I probably can, right? I'm going to go back and look. I want to see if I have ever picked above 10 in any of these. Maybe in one of Welsh's drafts because he's a good guy. He hasn't shut me out. So I'm picking at the turn, picking 15 in the first. Went Florentino Eldridge. Coming back, went Joe Schwar. I love Joe Schwar. I think that's going to be a hit. JoJo, kind of a sexy young double up there, which is creepy out of context. And then I went for older prospects with some injury history. Chase DeLauder in the fifth, followed by Marcelo Meyer. Nice. And then I got my pitching double up in Perales and LeGrande or LeGrane. I've heard it said both ways. So I don't know. I kind of like it. Got a lot of power. AL East power arms apparently is what I'm going after there. Like, they're hot right now. You Savage, Littler, you know, Early, Totally.
Yeah.
A lot of them. I like the DeLauder Meyer because it was like 75, 76 in terms of picks overall. Getting those guys that late where I know they're going to be on the 40.
They're in the majors.
Yeah. Major league futures. Exactly. Like, I understand health is an issue, but like the risk is kind of baked in the 70s. I'm like, fine. You know, and because it's not service time, Meyer is eligible, just eligible. Because I think he's got 127 at bats. So he just sneaks under that 130 limit. So, you know, playing it's sneaky there. All right. So we've got through the intro here. Let's get into some of the outfielders, Dylan. Talk to me about the first outfielder off the board, prospect outfielder off the board, in terms of ADP that you're seeing in these early DCs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect segue from what we were just talking about. It's Chase DeLauder in the 19th. The outfielders don't seem to be as sexy as the infielders. Like last week, we talked about Kieschel and Basayo, Carter Jensen, Weatherholt, Connor Griffin. So it's like Chase DeLauder is the first one off the board. I like him. Average. He played at the end of the season. Reasonable power. He's on the 40-man, like you said. So like he's probably going to get quite a bit of run. The Guardians did say they're going to look for outfield help in the off season. So I don't know if it's going to push him back, but I think the main thing is the injury risk. So I think it's a good spot. I think it's totally fine. I know that there are guys like Lars Nootbaar. I think Stanton's around here, Benintendi, who should get full-time at bats. Willy Abreu, Ramon Laureano are kind of all in this area. So, you know, I don't hate it, but I'd probably go the safe route there instead of taking the lottery.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just so intrigued. I understand what the injury history is. I also understand what my personal connection is with this player, having seen the original breakout in the Cape Cod League where like no one knew who this guy was going in. Yeah, I mean, some of the names that you mentioned, like Benintendi, I don't know. I would much rather play the risk game with the lottery in the 19th. But, you know, in these DCs, that is risky, and you do have to make sure that you have a viable bench option as a replacement because you're not in a backup round yet at that point, right? You're like utility or like fifth outfielder, maybe even fourth outfielder looking, you know, in round 19.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't dislike it though. And even with Stanton, there's a good chance that Stanton misses more games than DeLauder next year. Mm-hmm. It's possible. It's possible that he's finally healthy for a full year or for enough of a full year and it's minimal sort of damage and injury. So I don't know if I dislike that one so much, but I can certainly see what the risk is. He's a risky prospect. After I talked about just drafting him in a mock. So
I think if you're chasing batting average, then he's the guy you might want to take because he could probably be 270, 280. And like the Willy Abreu, Lars Nootbaar, Ramon Laureano, like I was saying, are probably like 250. And so he might be one of your guys you want to take to like maybe boost your batting average up. So I it's totally a justifiable pick. I have no problem with it. Just doesn't really suit my build in the DCs I'm doing right now.
Yeah, I think there's pop there too. Like if he's healthy, there's 20 plus homer power.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and he would probably hit at the top of the lineup. It's just a matter of health. Like I think he would have been an everyday player for him for the Guardians this year, and you know, maybe a rookie of the year candidate had he not been hurt again. But he is always hurt. He's been hurt like the last 6 years, it feels like. All right, who's the next name you want to discuss?
Yeah, just a couple of rounds later, it's like Dylan Beavers, one of the top RoboScout guys last year, got a taste of the Orioles. Do like him a lot, power, speed, average as well. I think the concern that people have why he's maybe going later than DeLauder other than pedigree is he's kind of a platoon bat. So there's a question of whether he'd get full time at bats, but I like this pick. I think I like Beavers better than DeLauder's because I'm leaning RoboScout more. And I think there's maybe a better chance of sticking maybe in the season sticking with the club for the whole season more. I don't know if he's going to get more plating time or plate appearances, but I don't know. I'm not really convincing myself as I'm talking about it, but I do prefer
help. Like there's a better track record of Beavers being on the field.
For sure.
Talent wise, I don't think it's terribly close, but Beavers has made some gains over the last couple of years. I think DeLauder is still, there's more upside. But there's more downside that he plays 40 games again, right? And then it's kind of like, ah, well, in a DC, that's not that valuable, especially with a prospect, because I feel like I've taken shots on prospects that maybe start the season, but with like an expectation that maybe the first couple of weeks, or like maybe starting the first week, like they break camp, right? Jordan Walker a few years ago. You ride it for a few weeks, but then you get an appointment where you're like, I don't know, the slump's coming, or it's already started to hit, or they're not hitting. You got to have that backup guy to move in because you don't have a waiver wire, right? So just from a build perspective, it's definitely riskier. And I agree. Like, I think Beavers is probably going to be an everyday guy, more or less, and especially strong side platoon, opportunities to get in later in games. Yeah, and I think he may see more lefties next year. We just need to see how the Orioles play that. But certainly, like, big skill gains, all that sort of stuff. And it wasn't a bad sample in the majors either. So can't complain there.
Then, so I'm going to interrupt you. And instead of letting you ask the question, the next couple guys, you know, it depends on which draft you're looking at, but Owen Casey's kind of going in the 27th for the Cubs. Slugger had a taste of the majors for a bit. Always pops on RoboScout just because he's so young and has so many good EVs, especially for someone so young, always young for the level. Not sure how much playing time he's going to get, but you know, the upside is tantalizing. And then another guy who's kind of common around that same area, 29th round, is Justin Crawford. I'm curious about your take, because I know he's kind of polarizing. He has a good batting average. He steals a lot of bases. It's just his ground ball rates are like 60% or higher and have been for like the last 3 years. But he's like on the cusp of the majors. The Phillies, you know, Schwarber's a free agent, and Castellanos, they're saying, is going to be gone. And so there's like some outfield spots that are probably available. So I'm wondering how much play he gets, how much run he gets, and what you think.
It's possible. He's not a terribly good outfielder. I think that's one of the big misconceptions about Crawford, is like defensively he's not great. He almost has an unwillingness to change things about his swing. So like he kind of leans into the ground ball rate and all that sort of stuff. One knock I've heard from scouts and analysts, frankly, is like, do we hit a point where those like bloop singles and ground balls down the line and like just seeing eye singles, is there a point where that stuff doesn't play in the majors, right? Where the infield single, some of that stuff like is just taken away because these guys, you know, the split second that you get in AAA is gone. He makes a lot of contact. He can run. The EVs aren't like awful, but the angles are terrible. And I don't see him changing, like remodeling his swing. So I'm kind of out, like, especially when we're talking about Casey, who I think it's just playing time with Casey. Like, he's not the greatest outfielder, but he moves well enough. He's got a big arm out there. And it's enough contact and approach with like big EVs and really good angles. So like, I'm inclined to lean into a player like that, to go after a guy like that versus, you know, a speed guy where I'm not so sure that he has the defense to keep, like, there's some miles. It's a very different body and different EVs, but there's like some Miles Straw elements to this where like, he needs to just have the runway where a team's like, we're going to like play Miles Straw. We're going to play Justin Crawford and we're going to give him the green light and he's going to steal 40 bases. That's where he's valuable. But unlike maybe like a Chandler Simpson, I don't think he's as good of a hitter as Simpson is. And he's not as fast. He's not as good of a base runner as Simpson is. You know?
So kind of like a Malik Smith. If you remember him from a couple of years ago.
But Malik Smith was better in the outfield. Like, I feel like, I'm not real into it. And some of the feedback we've gotten hasn't, like, from scouts and analysts and stuff like that. Just on like the top 30 and top 10 work that we're doing right now, because the NLs are going to stop popping out next week. I don't know, man. It's it's not great. And the other one that you have right here behind him in the 29th round is another very risky pick, and that's Spencer Jones. And, you know, I can kind of understand the mentality a little bit behind taking Jones at this point. But there's no guarantee that he's going to see a ton of major league time next year. And especially if he's still with the Yankees organization, his swing and miss is historically bad. Like, it is, I think it's worse than Joey Gallo. The angles are really good. The approach isn't good anymore. That's the other thing, is like, the angles are good. He likes to swing it and he hits it harder than just about anybody else. Right. But it reminds me of, what's the guy from the Reds? Aristides, like, Aquino. Like, I almost feel like it's going to be like that. Like, he's going to come up and have a crazy run and could help somebody win like a league because he like goes in some silly run for 2 months and hits 20 home runs. And then he's so bad for 2 weeks that you never play him again. Like, he could be useful like that in a DC. I would like him better in like a best ball league where his bad weeks, he's not going to be in the lineup, but I still don't see the Yankees rolling a player like this out every single day. You know, there's guys in their lineup now that have significantly better contact who the fans get on for their strikeouts. His slumps are so bad. Like, his peaks are as high as anybody, but his slumps are as bad as anybody. Like, where he's almost an auto out, you know, and then he'll sneak in a hard hit ball here and there. What is your take on Jones? Because I do see the upside, but even at this point, which I understand it's a 29th round, so it's not like a starter, it's a reserve round. But in a DC, like, you need guys that you're like, I'm going to get innings and I'm going to get at bats from these guys in rounds 25 to like 35. And then you could start to take your shots, in my opinion, like 35 to 50, 36 to 50.
Yeah, I think there is upside, so it's definitely justifiable. So this is how I see it. Either the Yankees are going to play him, and you just explained all the risks associated with that, and, you know, they have the Jason Dominguez thing where he didn't really play by the end of the season, and, like, his defense was bad, and so, like you don't want kind of another top prospect who's just going to languish on the bench. So anyway, they're going to either play him or they don't. So if they don't, is he going to stay in the AAA for another full year at 24? And then, like, his trade value is going to drop substantially and all that. So I kind of think they'll trade him, or they're going to play him, or else they're going to lose kind of like his value, his trade value. So there's a chance he gets traded. And then he say he's on the White Sox or some team that he's going to have full time at bats. Like, he could.
That's a great, that, I mean,
get it
that
to 30 happens, home runs, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of situation he sort of needs. Yeah. Like, he kind of needs, like, you know, a bottom tier team where you know, he can kind of just be the donkey who hits 30 home runs and, you know, runs a 220 batting average and walks a ton, and his WRC plus is good at the end of the season, but it's just not a player that's going to be on like a team that's playing games in October, I don't think. Because it's just a player like that is just very, very tricky to rely on. So, but I mean, like where he's going, like it's after Jordan Walker. I would take Jones over Walker. At this point, I'm kind of just out on Jordan Walker. And then what, Tyler Freeman, which I don't know. I mean, I could kind of see the upside with a guy like Freeman, but still the upside is obviously much higher with Jones, just less risk with a name like Freeman. So any other closing thoughts? Otherwise, I'm going to say let's jump into a break and then we'll finish off outfielders when we come back. What do you say?
Yeah, no, I have no closing thoughts.
All right, we'll be right back.
FT fam, another reason why you should love Arena Club is the grading system. So you recently pulled a slap pack and then you said, hey, it's not graded, grade it for me. They gave you an 8.5 out of 10 on your auto Whitey Ford card. And then they show you all the details of the grading system. It's very interactive within the app. And then you're done. If you want to sell the card or you want to know what it's worth, you've got it.
It's like getting taken to school on cards. And I think that's the coolest part of it. If you're young or old, you understand, hey, this is how it gets deciphered all the way through. It shows you the numbers and how they went through it. I think that's the coolest part about this whole thing. And then you can keep it traded or sell it, do whatever you want.
And it's so much more efficient to do this through Arena Club. Whether you're ripping a pack, there's the slab packs, buying a card, selling a card, grading a card, it's all there for you. We talk about it all season long. ArenaClub.com/FOUL is where you can go to give it a shot. 20% off your first card purchase. ArenaClub.com/FOUL. Use the code FOUL at checkout and get 20% off.
All right, we are back. We were talking way too early prospect ADPs in Draft Champions Leagues over on NFBC. Jeff Ponce, Dylan White. We just talked a handful of outfielders. We're going to jump into some of these back-end names now. Kevin Alcantara in the 31st, Colby Thomas in the 34th, Manuel Rodriguez, favorite of ours, in the 35th, and George Valera, late season hero, George Valera, also in the 35th. You know, I could take a flyer on Valera there. I understand the upside with Emmanuel Rodriguez. I'm kind of out on Kevin Alcantara. Like, this is his eighth handbook. We're going through this just historically. The amount of guys that have made the handbook eight times, only one has done nine. That's Forrest Whitley, which is also not a great distinction. Eight times, it's just there's not a lot of, like, full-time position players. So, like, history is really much, very much not on his side. A major leaguer with loud tools, I understand the power and speed combination. He's another guy that maybe needs a trade because I think Casey would be the one to get the playing time over Alcantara if Tucker does not re-sign with the Cubs. Colby Thomas, there's just too many mouths to feed in that outfield. And I wouldn't be shocked if for the next couple of years they maybe add a free agent or two. And then Emmanuel Rodriguez, just another guy that can't stay on the field. But the production hasn't always been good the way it has been with Chase DeLauder. And there's still major swing and miss concerns, I think, with Rodriguez. I like him more as a buy low in a dynasty league. In a DC, I think I'm going to let somebody else draft him, as much as I do like the player sort of in theory. What's your take on those guys? I think I would probably personally rank it right now. Probably Valera, Alcantara, Rodriguez, Thomas. But I can see the upside of Rodriguez over Alcantara too. You know, they're Alcantara, Rodriguez, and Valera are all sort of in the same boat with very varied degrees of defensive value. Alcantara being the best of the bunch.
Yeah, I think I go Valera first just because they were batting him second in playoffs. Yeah. So it's like
doing that, but like you see a bunch of righties in a week and you're like, fine, I'll play Valera, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't see Emmanuel Rodriguez or Alcantara hitting high in the order for their teams. So I think Valera is number one for sure. I don't really like any of these guys. Emmanuel Rodriguez, like you said, I like as a player and I like in OBP leagues in the DC, which is batting average league. I'm not a big fan, especially in his like rookie season. You know, he may grow into a nice slugger, like 240 with 30 home runs and handful of steals, 15 steals or so. But I don't think that's going to be this year. So I'm probably passive on all those guys. Because if you kind of slide to the right and look at pitchers or pitchers I'd rather take, and then like infielders we were talking about, like Aiden Miller is kind of in that area. Like I much prefer that. So yeah, Valero is probably the only one of those guys I take. But you know, you can't really go wrong in the 30s. It's you just can't go wrong, you know, 10 rounds in a row. So you can take your shots and it doesn't hurt as much, but you just can't keep taking shots.
Yeah, last couple names here that that went 37, round 38. Max Clark, which I really like that play, 37. I think that could pay off, frankly. And that's late enough to take your shots. Zach Veen in round 38. No thanks. I don't think he's going to be in the mix there. It wouldn't shock me if he's with another organization. And then in another draft, Walker Jenkins went in the 38th, which I prefer to Veen. And I think like Max Clark that's a decent Hail Mary to take sort of in, you know, the closing rounds of the draft with some upside. 40-man roster guy is going to have to be on it. And I think there's a good chance. Actually, no. Is Jenkins a year away from the 40? I think he's a year away from the 40. I'm misspeaking here. But I think he could potentially be up early next year. Yeah, 27. So a couple of years away, actually. I think he could be up though still. I mean, he was up in AAA for like a decent sample, like a month. So he's back in AAA, St. Paul, Minneapolis, short ride to Twin Cities, right?
Yeah.
I think he's a guy who could debut next year. I think Clark's going to debut next year. And I think they could both debut pretty early. The Tigers, I think need that boost of Clark and McGonagall in that lineup. I think we saw the lack of firepower 1 through 9, and it would really lengthen that lineup and improve them defensively in some spots. Jenkins, for me, the Twins are rebuilding. Jenkins, for me, makes a ton of sense to be up, be the star, try to get that pick, see what happens. Because the performance has been good, and he's got some AAA experience. And with that team, why waste the bullets, right? Like if the guy's healthy and on the field, so.
You think he jumps Emmanuel Rodriguez? Like he passes them on depth chart?
Yeah, I think they're. I think if they were both ready, I think there's a chance they would go Jenkins first, or they could be both. You know, I think both is totally reasonable. Like I said, they're rebuilding. I mean, they sold Carlos Correa for more or less like just take his contract, take this guy off our hands, and send us, you know, your worst player. And that's more or less what they did. All right, we've talked enough outfielders here. Another one's Josh Baez, who went in the 40th. I think that was in James's DC. I really like that pick. He is a 40-man guy. I think he's going to get added, no doubt. I think he's a top-runner prospect. I think the contact gains and approach gains have been very real. We've seen it kind of tick up for a few years in a row and just took a drastic step this year. He's got huge power. He's got speed. He's got defensive ability. And it's an outfield where I think there could be some shakeups. I think there could be some players who are traded out this offseason as they really lean into their rebuild. We could see Weatherholt. We could see Baez very, very early next year. So I think that's a great value pick, whoever got him, where they got him. All right, let's talk a little bit about pitchers. We maybe don't talk about all these guys, but let's maybe talk about, you know, the pitchers that were taken before round 20. I think those are the most interesting ones. Everybody else, I think, is just high prospect flyers. So let's go into that a little bit. Cam Schlittler, the first one off the board, after Tanner Bibee, before Shane Bieber, before Nolan McClain, which does surprise me a little bit. So let me post that question to you. Would you prefer Schlittler or McClain for 2026?
For 2026, I think it's McClain. I think he threw more innings last year, so I just kind of feel he's safest to like approach 200 innings. And, you know, I know you love McClane. And so I love Schlittler too, but I don't know. I think it's, I'm fine with either of them, but I'd probably lean McClane.
I'd like to have both of them in my rotation on my fantasy team. I would lean McClane. I think he has more varied out generating skills in terms of the ground balls, the swings and misses, all that sort of thing, a really deep arsenal of good pitches. He's a super athlete. And full-time pitching really just took like a fish to water. I mean, he took off. He was always pretty good, was a two-way player early in his pro career. Throughout his amateur career, was a multi-sport guy when he first got on campus at Oklahoma State. So I think there's a lot to that story, a lot of context that you could see how much he's gained. And I think the home park maybe matters a little bit too. You know, I think pitching there versus Yankee Stadium, you know, your mistakes are not as magnified. The next name is Jacob Mizierowski. He went after McClane, but before Pablo Lopez. So let me ask you, would you rather have Mizierowski versus Pablo Lopez, who is dealing with some injuries? So there is some risk there with Lopez, I suppose.
I'd go Pablo Lopez.
Yeah, I think I would too.
I think the injuries were like hamstring and ankle or something like that. It wasn't really, he had a shoulder thing at the end, but then he had an MRI and there's no structural damage at all. So I think he's probably a go. In fact, I think Pablo Lopez is probably a sneaky value pick because people are scared of the injuries. I mean, Mizierowski, I'm still worried about the control. I'm still worried about the high walk rate, the potential for high walk rate. I like kind of having low whip, especially in the early picks. I don't really want to like Dylan Cease, who can have like a 1.3 whip, like those types of guys. I want the really low whips because, you know, once you get into the dregs, once you fill out your back 50, you're having your 1.4 whips and stuff. So I like to have a nice whip base. And so Mizierowski just scares me with that. And so I'd go Pablo. But I mean, I obviously Mizierowski could be ahead of all these guys. I think Chase Burns, who's later, could be ahead of all these guys. It's kind of just pick the guy, your favorite guy of these kind of these top guys.
The next one I wanted to call out, I think this is really interesting. And that is Hurston Waldrip goes in the 11th before Chase Burns and Bubba Chandler in the 12th and Trey Yesavage in the 15th. Now, granted, Yesavage's performance in the ALCS, his second start, I don't think it happened by the time that pick was made. I would take Yesavage, Burns, and Chandler above Waldrip, and I think I would probably take it Burns and Yesavage among that foursome. What say you?
Yeah, I agree. Waldrip's not my guy at all. In the other draft I'm in, he went later. So like that 11th is kind of an anomaly. He went the 16th later, but you know, he had a terrible beginning of the season. And then there's some talk, like he talked to Sean Murphy in AAA and he like changed his approach and then he kind of finished strong. And, you know, he was kind of highly touted coming in after his draft season and he's on the Braves. And so I think there's a lot of kind of that is residual in people's heads that he's going to be an excellent pitcher. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm a bit, I think it's a riskier pick that he's going to kind of actualize into what like Chase Burns, Bubba Chandler, Nolan McClain, Cam Schlittler have been showing. I think it's definitely a riskier pick and he's behind Yesavage for sure for me. And the bottom of those guys.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. I just, I understand it to an extent with Waldrip, but I just, even what we've seen in the majors, for me, I would much rather go with Burns, Chandler, Yesavage. They'd all have much better fastball quality. And I would say, like, Yesavage has the better splitter between him and Waldrip, right? And Bubba Chandler's changeup is really, really good. Chase Burns' slider is really good. So even like the secondary side of things, I don't even think he has the best secondary. So I don't quite understand the pick unless the guy who made it was a huge Braves fan. And then my apologies, sir. I don't mean to be a jerk here, but a couple more names I want to throw at you, Dylan. So this is picks in the 17th, 18th, and 19th round. We have another foursome. Lineup: Jonah Tong, Conley Early, Parker Messick, and Peyton Tolley for 2026 for me.
This is very funny because in the DC I'm in, me and Brian Slack, we're taking those guys and we're trying to figure out who to take. So RoboScout loves Tong. I love Tong. He didn't have the greatest. He had a nice debut, but then he kind of petered out. He's not assured of a spot in the Mets rotation. I'm sure the Mets are going to spend or whatever, and he may be the odd man out. Peyton Tolley, love the stuff. Love what he did when he came up. Didn't love that he got put into the bullpen. Don't love that the Red Sox have a lot of possible rotation guys. But he's like one of my favorites as well. And then Messick is kind of also a RoboScout guy who kind of snuck in under the radar, and he probably performed the best maybe out of all those and in the Guardians. So we were like, how do we want to pick these guys? And we took all three of them back to back to back, 18, 19, 20. And we went Tong, Messick, Tolley. We didn't think Tolley was going to come back, and then he did. And we're like, well, you know what? We might as well finish the trifecta. Is that the right order? I don't know. Probably not. Connelly Early was gone by then. He's probably more assured of being in the Red Sox rotation than Tolley is, but I like Tolley's stuff better. I think you do too. I could be wrong. Waiting to hear your thoughts, but yeah, those are the three we took. It's honestly, it's like, who do you want? They all have amazing upside. They all have their downside or their potential risks. So it's kind of like Messick doesn't have the higher upside. I think he's kind of a floor guy. Maybe his whip's not going to be the greatest, but he probably nine times out of 10 it's going to be the second or most innings of those three. I don't know. Maybe that's wrong. I feel yeah, like I'm think, talking I think to myself in circles.
I think he could be, probably doesn't have much upside. Would probably line it up for next year. Conley Early, who I think is just in the Red Sox rotation. I don't think there's a question about that. Left-handed, really good stuff across the board. We saw some good starts from him. I have Tong and Tolley pretty close because I think they both have good fastballs. Tong has the good changeup. There's some question about the breaking stuff. I think it could improve. I think he could come back even stronger next year and kind of knows what he needs to do now. Young pitchers getting their teeth kicked in the first taste of the big leagues is a lot more common than it seemed this year, where we had a lot of guys who had success early. Tolley's another guy where a great fastball might be certainly the best fastball of this bunch, but maybe one of the best fastballs in baseball. Enough secondaries, and they kept improving. I think we'll see those improve next year. That'll be a big step forward for him. And Messick is, like you said, I think it's a back end of the rotation, deeper league guy where he's going to get you innings. He's kind of maybe better in some points league, was where innings are and quality starts are a big part of things. But isn't necessarily going to be great in a roto league, where I think the ratios are probably going to be more like a 1-2-8 to like 1-3-4 sort of whip, and you know, a 3-9-5 to like 4-20 sort of ERA, like somewhere in that range. But, you know, could give you 175, 180 innings. And there is some value in certain leagues for guys like that. But among this group, I think I would probably have him last, just based on what the upside is. But I think all of these arms are very interesting. And I just lean Early because I think there's upside there with maybe a higher floor and a little bit less risk than the other guys, just in terms of how his role was used and how he was used in the playoffs as a starter, even if it wasn't a great start. I still think that that's the team telling you something, and I'm going to listen.
Yeah, no, I agree. Definitely Early is justifiable as the top one. I'm actually looking at the board, and we took Tong, and then we took Glaber, actually, and then Messick and Tolley came back. We're like, do we take the second one? And then we took Messick, and then Tolley came back. So that's it wasn't three in a row. It was three out of four.
Well, that is pretty fun. Well, there we go. We've been through all the positions in this prospect ADP. series of episodes here on the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. I am Jeff Ponce. That's Dylan White. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week. Cheers.